everyone, welcome to another episode of the Let's Do It Afraid podcast. Today we have a special guest. He is a contemporary artist who has showcased his work at Sonoma State University and San Francisco. After receiving his master's degree, he taught for a year at San Francisco State before deciding to pursue his passion for art, photography, and video full-time. He's also deeply involved in the Bay Area music scene, having worked with local musicians, including Los de la Siete, and he remains an influential figure in the lowrider community as a member of the Latin Rollers Car Club. Everyone, please welcome Giovanni Soto.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I think that photographers and like artists are literally the coolest and most creative people in the world. It's fascinating how you can take a picture of something and kind of put a timestamp on something so beautiful. I think it takes a really, really creative person. I could not do that. I'm the worst photographer. Even like on my social media, I try, and my daughter, she helps me, but I don't know. Like, I don't have the eye for it. So I think it's fascinating when somebody actually has the ability to do something like that. So thank you so much for being here.
Of course, thank you for having me, and thank you for the words.
Yeah. So the first question that we like to start all of our interviews with is, what is a current fear that you are currently struggling with today?
Honestly, how expensive everything is getting. That's my current fear. That's about it.
Yeah. How are we going to put food on the table?
Yeah. Not just that, but like daily necessities, you know, like the tax just went up. Everything's getting pretty pricey now. So I feel like it's something that affects everyone like equally.
Everyone. We went prom shopping with my daughter a few days ago, and we paid $500 for a dress. And the person at the shop was telling us that, like, you know, everything's gone up because they get most of their product from China, so they're now having to pay a bunch of money in tariffs and the 10% tax increase just in general. And my husband and I were like, damn, we just bought a dress that she's going to wear one day in her life.
I was going to say, good thing you don't have any of the girls, girl.
Seriously, I know, but I'm like, whatever, it is what it is. Hopefully, maybe one day she can wear it at a different party. I don't know, but you're right. Everything is getting ridiculously expensive. So you, like we mentioned, you've shown your art at Sonoma State and in San Francisco. Can you share what initially inspired you to pursue art, and how has your artistic journey evolved over the years?
Yeah, so I've actually been like doing art since I was a child, you know, just the doodles and stuff. But in undergrad, actually, when I was at Sonoma State, I was studying to do nursing. So I was trying to get into the nursing program. And initially, I did that to take care of my parents, who are both disabled now. But I had a talk with one of my counselors, and I was doing my community service hours for it. And I really didn't like nursing as much as I thought I would. And she commented, well, like, you know, are you studying for your family, or are you doing it for yourself? And I was like, well, I'm doing it for myself, you know. Well, she suggested, like, what's something that you love with a passion? I was like, I love art. And that's when she said, like, just do art. I thought that was, like, the craziest thing I'd heard. Because I'd never heard about that before. Like, someone doing, like, art for a living. Like, I'd seen it around, but like, I didn't think that's something that I could do. And then I just stuck with it, and ever since then I kind of told myself, if I'm going to do something like this, it's got to be with like 150% effort. It can't even be 100. Like, it's got to be overboard just to make sure that I'm putting in the effort it requires. And since then, just seeing the trust that people have for not just myself, but like what I'm able to provide as an artist, like kind of that perspective, but also like the quality of work and this new idea of, like you mentioned earlier, capturing the moment, and just kind of through my lens, right? Just having people resonate with that and react positively always gives me, like, you know, that little warm feeling in the heart that feeds me.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I don't know personally any artists myself either. I think it probably is something that you don't see a lot. Like it's not not recognized, but you just don't see it happen around us. I don't think we're like in this area that's predominantly, I don't know, like we're not in New York or something like that, right? So it probably isn't something that you saw around here. So you're probably like, how could I do this? Like, can you even make money off of this? But I just think it's fascinating. I'm glad that you found something that you really, really liked and that you didn't just follow through with nursing because that's what you felt maybe that you needed to do, but that you actually were brave enough to follow kind of your heart and what you're passionate about. So I commend you for that. I think that's amazing.
Thank you.
I have a question. Like, how did you do you think it had anything to do with not seeing anybody that you resembled around you that did art or things like that? Because like for me, I love math and I was like, what am I gonna do with math, right? Like I literally went to college and my parents were like, what are you going to college for? I'm like, because I need to find what I'm gonna do, right? Because they're just like, my brothers were always like, you have to go to school. It is la mujer. And like, we did the hard work. So now you have to go to school. And I was really good in school and I loved school. So I was like, okay, but what am I going to go for? Like, I honestly didn't know. I did 2 years of just like general ed because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I ended up doing like a liberal arts major when I moved to the East Bay. However, when I moved back to Santa Rosa, they didn't have my major, so I was like, what the heck do I do? And then the counselor was like, well, maybe you can do something that you really like. And I'm like, okay. So I just lost like, literally, I had two more classes in East Bay to finish, and I moved over here. And I was like, how the hell? Like, I don't want to commute, so what do I do, right? And they're like, just change it to math. And I was like, I guess I love math, right? So I did that. And then I didn't know like how to fill my schedule up to be able to get my financial aid, so I ended up taking like an accounting class just because it was related to math, and I loved it. So then I changed my major to accounting. But then I never saw anybody around me being a mathematician, right? You don't hear that, like a Latino mathematician or a Latino artist. And I'm like, I don't. Maybe it's because we don't see ourselves in somebody like that around us. Do you think that had anything to do with it?
I do believe that, and to be honest, it's what we are exposed to. Like, I can say that I felt like I wasn't really exposed to much in the sense of like academic, right? I was more of like sometimes just like kicking it with the homies down the street or something, and just staying around the like where I live, right? I didn't get to go out much. My parents were always working. And same, I had to work with my parents sometimes. So it's like, I'm not really exposed to, much of, I guess, the life of the artist or whatever. Like, artists to me, growing up, were like homies that were tagging up, the bridges and the walls and shit. But yeah, no, I think it definitely played a large role.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think we've talked about that a lot, how sometimes when you don't really see yourself, there's not a lot of other people that are doing what you're doing in the Latino culture. It can sometimes feel like it's a barrier or something that's not reachable, but I'm just glad that you were brave enough to go for it because you're obviously good at what you do and the world would have missed out, right? If you wouldn't have actually like followed your passion. So as we talked about, you're currently working full time on your art, your video, and your photo projects. You've recorded and photographed local Bay Area artists. How do you approach working with musicians and how does your art complement or connect to their music?
So, working with local musicians, a lot of the times it's people who I have already like frequented. So it's just like pulling up to their events. Sometimes you just pull up, or I just pull up with my camera. I'm like, hey, you want some pictures, right? So it's not necessarily like forcing them to try to work with you. It's just like, I have some pictures if you want them, send them over, or just post them on my page. And if they like them, they can hit me up later, or I could ask like, hey, dude, I saw you're doing this event. Is it cool if I just tag along? So it's more of putting yourself out there, kind of see if they're gonna, like vibe with it. And yeah, it's just getting to know the people, being a normal person with them, not like trying to get anything out of it. And I feel like that's the most genuine way to connect, because then at that point, like, it doesn't feel forced, right? And I mean, the music that they play, I listen to all the time. Just they're like covering songs that I like, or they're making their own songs and they sound pretty chill, so I like it's stay listening to them and stay hanging out. So it becomes more of a friendship rather than just like work. Like
Yeah.
at the time, I wouldn't even say I'm working. I'm just hanging out. But I
Yeah.
have the camera, so it, you know, something comes out of it.
I'm glad that you said that. We had an interview with Andre. I don't know if you know him. He was around here. He was doing a lot of music around in this area. He currently moved back to Chicago, and he was saying something like it's really hard to find to make like new friends because you don't know their genuine intentions, and sometimes you feel like they just want something from you. So I like that you said that you come from that approach. Like you're wanting them to know like, hey, I don't want anything from you other than I just want you to look at my work. And if you like it, you know, take it. And if not, that's cool too. You know, and it's also kind of taking a chance on yourself, right? Like you have to really believe in yourself and believe that what you are doing is worthy of them to see. Like you're not even, like you can't go into that situation being kind of nervous or afraid or doubting yourself. You have to be like, no, I'm good at what I do and I want to prove it to these people. And like you said, I think that that forms a really good connection with you and the musicians, that they can trust you, that you're coming from a good place. Have you ever done music videos, or is it more of like photography for them?
Yeah, I've done a few music videos. I'm actually working on one right now that should be out by the end of the month. That one actually is for one of my boys, Emix. He's a Oakland artist. He is kind of the reason why I started to do music videos. I would work with him for photography at the time, just for his album covers or just whatever he needed of a promo. And he just asked me like, "Hey, are you down to shoot a video?" And I was like, "Well, I haven't done before, like done that before, but I'll give it a shot, you know. If he's willing to take a like a kind of like a chance on me, I'll do that." Sorry. And yeah, ever since then, it's just kind of been us working. I mostly just work with him, just 'cause like we just get along that well. But I do like live videos and stuff of like playbacks when the bands are just like reciting the song, just something. Like, but music videos is definitely a whole new vibe. It's for
Yeah.
sure for that.
Do you like it more or less, or is it just different than, you know, doing photography or something like that?
I would say I like them both equally, but I'll put it like this. Photography, you live in the moment more because all you're doing is capturing that shot. And music video, you're living the moment for making the video purposes, but you're stuck with at least a week and a half's worth of work, like nonstop. So it's, they're both cool, and the end product on both sides is good, but it really depends like what I'm in the mood for, because I like a challenge, and that's where the music video comes. But the photo, it became more like a second nature, I feel, but that's because I use it to like make my paintings and stuff.
Yeah. Wow, that's so cool that you said that. Photography, you live in the moment. And then in a video, you're kind of maybe telling a story that is going to happen, right? So it's really like a different feeling behind it. But you do have to use your creative abilities to still see a bigger picture. So you're always doing art no matter which of one of those you're doing. So we know you've been involved in the lowrider scene and the Chicano culture. How does this culture influence your art and your projects?
Yeah, I've been involved for a minute now. To be honest, the lowrider scene, it's been at least the last 8, 7 years, I want to say, that I've been involved. I saw it as something, to be honest, like I was missing, right? I wasn't as exposed to it when I was younger because I wasn't around that crowd. I was more around like the homies who were just gaming and stuff. But when I first, I think I was in college, like after my senior year of high school, yeah, I began to like hang around the lowrider crowd, and it felt like it's almost something that I had been missing, right? Like just the sense of the community that's built and the way everyone's, I don't know, it feels like they make you almost feel involved automatically, like into their new fam into the family. And it just felt like extremely different, and I appreciated it, how they like welcome you with open arms. And you don't even have to have anything to offer. It's just being around and being genuine with one another. And yeah, it kind of influenced my work in the sense of like what story I want to tell, right? Because every almost I go to like lowrider hop competitions or just lowrider cruises or events, and the pictures that I take, I try to make it pictures of like that moment, whether it's that hop, right, that gets the highest hop, or like people enjoying the moment, like the way they dress and all this stuff. It's like stuff that catches my attention and that influences what I end up making as a painting or a drawing, the end product, kind of like what I guess like what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I know Yvette's like really involved in the community as well. Is that how it's been for you, Yvette, too? Just like felt really like a family and.
Yeah, but my brothers have always been involved, so I feel like that just brought me back to when I was a child, and I feel like I'm healing my inner child whenever I go on my own cruises. And like my brother would always have his lowriders in front of my window, like when we lived in a different house. My room was right in front of the windows, and it was like literally if I heard somebody, I would wake up in the middle of the night and like stare at like who the hell is looking at because of the car. And one time I did find somebody, like a creeper, trying to steal into the car, and I was like, what, like 5 years old? And so like those cars are always like something that bring me back to my childhood. And then the times my brother would pick me up from school with those cars, like I like me sentía soñada, like it was, and the times my mom would pick me up, I'd be like, oh my God, can he just pick me up, please? Like, I don't know what it was, but my kids are like that now. They're like, how come you can't pick me up in the lowrider? I'm like, bro, because half the time the car's broken. Like, what do you want me to do? But yeah, I love it. It's just like very welcoming, as he says. It's very much different. I mean, back in the days, I think a lot of it was involved with like gangs and stuff. Now it's kind of died down, but you still see some of it. Like, it's inevitable, I guess you can say. But like, people have to respect the spot, because if something were to go down, like we all lose. It's not just like the two people that were involved, it's everyone, because it literally will kill the whole vibe, and like we can't have events anymore. So people know they have to be on their best behavior, which is something that was really hard to manage when we had our own car club event. We had people managing it. It was just like, what if something goes off? You just never know, you know? But for the most part, it's been good. Impala's had theirs last year, and that's where I saw Giovanni. He took some really cool pictures, and I was like, damn, he's so good. But yeah, it's something different, and my kids love it. We all love it, so.
Yeah,
Yeah,
was
and it's
it?
always the kickback too, so it's automatically like Yeah,
chilling. It's
it's
all
like a
vibes.
chill zone. Like, people come and hang out, and my mom's like, I go to Sabacabana. I'm like, I don't know. People are hanging out. Like, so you're tired? It's cool. Like, you guys can go home. But, like, you know, it's just like, oh, okay. I just wasn't sure, like, how to prepare. I'm like, just prepare for the whole day. Because we're going to be there all day.
I think that's cool. I was going to say that for me, too, my experience was when I was younger was always like, oh, that's kind of like gang related, was like the way I saw it, or I don't know, maybe that's just how it was framed when I was growing up. But I'm glad that now it's kind of been taken back as like, no, this is just part of our culture and our heritage. And it is a beautiful thing that brings people together, and it's not just like this taboo thing. So I'm glad that you guys are kind of changing the narrative on that. But what, Giovanni, what role do you see these culture traditions playing in the future, especially with younger generations?
I see them playing a big role, to be honest, because a lot of the kids that are into the lowrider culture, lowrider scene, are staying off the streets in a sense of like the gang banging. And I've seen that a lot more recently, and it honestly makes me feel real good, right? Because they're not exposed to, well, they are exposed to it, but it's more of like they're explained through it a little bit easier and like more simple to understand. Right, like almost, I feel like a lot of kids nowadays are kind of being born into the lowrider culture, which is sick. Because then at that point, you're automatically like being, I don't know what the word is, but essentially like taken care of, right? While being placed in this scene where you're able to grasp your roots and not feel guilty about it, right? Because you mentioned it was almost like a taboo thing, but it's like, why should your culture be a taboo, right?
I
And
love that.
what the people are doing now is like they're kind of regaining and like taking that back. I think that's like the beautiful part of it.
Yes, thank you. I completely agree. And I know that when I was younger in high school, family members and friends that would be involved in gang, I think a lot of the times it was kind of to fill this void of wanting to feel like they belonged to something bigger than them or like a family, right? Maybe they didn't have that love and support at home. So I kind of love that they're now creating this family and this place, the sense of belonging and pride in the lowrider community, because I do agree that I think it's going to help the kids stay off the street and focus on something positive.
I
Yeah, and
agree.
I definitely
saw a lot of good feedback too. I think it was last year. There was an event that happened at Elsie where a bunch of lowrider cars pulled up, and I was in that event, and I took some pictures and stuff. And just seeing how the kids would react to these cars, or like call each other over, like, "Hey, look at this one over here," and just kind of I don't know, wanting to be immersed in that scene.
Yeah, I was there. I think we did, like, was it Halloween? Is that the one you're talking about? Or was it the, there was another one, I think, at the beginning of the year.
I think it's the beginning of the year one with the acid dancers.
Okay, yeah. They had two, but I know that they also have like a little club, and they came to the Mi Cultura Car Club event that we had, and they had like a lot of the youngsters from that club there, and I thought it was super cool how like it was educational but also like getting them involved into all this whole lowrider scene, because a lot, like you're saying, a lot of them don't get this family feeling, right? And so them coming to these events through the school was pretty cool too. And yeah, it's awesome to see how interested they are in all these programs. And also, like, somebody brought it up to me, because I one of my kids does suffer from like bullying and stuff, and somebody was like, why don't you create a lowrider club or like a lowrider project, I don't know, against bullying. I'm like, you know how hard that is? Like, it's easier said than done, but that would be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool, but you can do it. If anyone can do it, you can do it.
I know, but I'm like, damn, I just have all these ideas. I'm just like, I don't know how to plan it. Okay, but maybe down the road you'll see it.
For sure. So we know that you've gone through some challenging times recently, especially with your mom's health, your parents' health, but you've talked about how your faith and your family have kept you grounded. Can you share how your faith has played a role in your resilience and what family means to you during difficult moments?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to explain. I guess it's typical, but like I'm the type of person that holds everything in, and that really, in a sense, it really helped because it forced me to do it, but it also hurt a lot, right? Because you internalize it and then it hurts even more later on. But family to me is honestly kind of everything, because at the end of the day, like that's who you can really count on.
Yeah.
And to me, family doesn't stop at blood, right? Family could be homies that you've been really close with and have this other connection with that no amount of like blood can bind, right? So family to me isn't just blood. It's also like experiences that you had with people. It's moments that you've had with people. And yeah, to me that's kind of everything, because at the end of the day, whoever's in your circle, that's what makes your circle what it is, you know. And yeah, I definitely do feel like the way that I learned to go through hardships might not be the best, but I mean that's kind of how I grew up doing so, you know, at a young age. It definitely helped that I've been changing as I grow. Obviously, hopefully everyone grows like also as they grow up, but some people don't. Yeah, it's been helpful just seeing what's actually hurting rather than seeing it and ignoring it, because I feel like that's something that we tend to do. We just like, oh, this sucks, but whatever. But it's like, but why does it suck? Why does it make you feel like this? How can you change that? You know, how can you heal that?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I think that that's probably something that a lot of men don't admit to themselves, right? Or to anyone, really, that something is hurting them or affecting them. You know, whenever I've tried to talk to my siblings, my brothers, about hardships, I feel like they just like kind of sweep them under the rug, and you know, they try to put up this facade that everything's fine. And I worry Because I do have a son and I don't want him to feel like he has to pretend that he's okay when he's not okay. So is there something that maybe helps you to feel comfortable to open up to maybe your family or your friends that when you're having a hard day?
I personally think that I'm just like open book. Like I don't hide anything from anyone. I try to be sorry. I try to be as genuine as I can when it comes to who I am, but also like my art. That's kind of where it comes from, right? So I don't see a sense in acting tough all the time. Because at the end, I mean, like, who are we doing it for? Like I do catch myself doing it sometimes, and I try to break out of it, but it's almost like a learned behavior, which I've for the last like 5 years I've been trying to break, but it's like sometimes it's just so embedded in you that it's really really hard, but it's also understanding that regardless of how many problems you got at the time or whatever, when you start to actually deal with them and like focus on them and solving them, there's something good that's gonna happen at the end of the day. So it's opening up a wound, but it's not showing weakness. It's just showing how strong you can be, that you're allowing it to hurt and also you're allowing it to heal, and you're healing it yourself. So in a sense, I feel like it sometimes it's takes a bigger person to do something like that than it does to just hide it, which it can be seen uncomfortable in an open space with other people. But in reality, it's like, what do those people have to say about you? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, what matters is how you feel and kind of what you're willing to do at the end of the day.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. I feel like every time that we have these interviews, I learn so much. So just thank you because everything that you just said really resonated with me. And it's something that I will think about moving forward with my son to help him, navigate his emotions. I also probably think it helps so much with you that you are so connected to your art. And so that is how you probably get all of your feelings out, right? Like, for example, if I write poetry, my poetry is my escape. Or if I write music, any great artist who writes their music, like that is how they get out their pain or their frustration or their sadness. So it probably feels kind of the same way for you. I'm guessing. I don't know, but I'm guessing that that's kind of what it feels like for you, like really cathartic. So thank you so much for being vulnerable. We really, really appreciate that.
Of course, and I feel like, I don't know, it's important to be able to speak about things like this, because if someone doesn't do it, other people are going to hold back. And there's nothing wrong with feeling down, feeling upset, or even, I don't know, like some people would get embarrassed to talk about things like this, but it's like, why would you feel embarrassed to feel, you know?
Yeah, we all feel we're not robots. And
I love that.
like you said, there's a lot of strength in saying how you feel, like you're not doing anyone a favor by bottling up all these emotions. I think that there is a great power in a man or a woman, anyone who can feel what they have to feel, but at the same time, not like react, like emotionally intelligent, they can like process their emotions. Like, yes, I'm feeling angry at the moment, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to cuss you out or beat you up. Like I always told my son, like, hey, if you're feeling angry right now, you can go to your room, you can scream into a pillow. Like, that's okay. Like, if that's how you feel right now, like, I don't want you like hitting a wall or like hitting your sister, but like go into your room and just yell in the pillow if that's what you need to do,
Yeah, and unfortunately though, I do feel like it's because of trauma. Trauma has taught me all that. And just my wanting to understand why I was being like that or acting this way. Because I actually did go through a phase, and this is more of an adult, where I would get just like so uncomfortable just being so mad that I didn't want to explode on anyone, that I would punch a wall, right? But not like a house wall, like concrete. But I didn't want to break anything. Because it's also like, I don't know, it's learning how to control your emotions, but also not everyone learns the same way. So you also have to see how that person learns and like understands moments. Because I feel like as a child, a lot of things were confusing me, right? Maybe it's like moments to where you become angry because you don't get something your way, but then it's like you have to understand that not everything is supposed to go your way. You can't control what happens and this and that. But as a kid, I didn't know. I just thought like, oh, they just don't care, or certain things. But it definitely is about how you approach something, and that I learned as an adult. But
Yeah, and I think that that's something we all need to be better about as like parents, about teaching our kids how to kind of monitor their emotions. You know, I'm trying to think of the word, I can't think of it, but it's just like, it's not like control your emotions, but just like a healthy outlet to process them, right? So I'm trying to be more conscious of that as a parent, especially of a boy, because I feel like boys just are told so many different things. And like you said, trauma. I'm trying to break generational curses. So, you know, it's like I'm trying my best here, but so that's why I'm so grateful that you're here and you're talking about this, because it is so important. It's not the same thing as like me as his mother telling him something, than maybe him hearing it from another man. So thank you so much for being here and for sharing this with all of us. We really, really appreciate it. So speaking of kind of on those lines, mental health is also a topic that's often swept under the rug in the, you know, Hispanic Chicano culture. Have you seen this in your community or even in your personal life?
Yeah, and I mean, like I mentioned earlier, trauma was a big part of my life. It still kind of is. I didn't understand mental health. I didn't know what it was until maybe like 4 years ago, to be honest. I just thought it was something normal that everyone like overreacted, or just everyone was treated bad sometimes, or I thought sometimes people's misconduct was just something that we had to accept. And when it comes to how it makes us feel, I never understood that. Like, why do I feel like this? Or I can actually help myself not feel like this. Or I don't know. I definitely would say that I faced a lot of mental health like problems when it comes to just like depression and anxiety. I did actually go through therapy when I was younger, a few years ago, as a way to like understand what I was going through,
Do you feel
and
like it helped you?
it helped a lot. But also, it opened a whole new like can of
Worms?
worms.
Yeah.
Yeah, you or at least I learned to understand that I was my own, like I was fighting myself. Right, so in a sense, like I had to understand that I was creating my own problems as sabotage, but then I was like asking myself, like, why? And well, why are you sabotaging yourself? Because part of me didn't believe that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, right? Like, why am I in this position of being able to make art and do this when other people can't, right? So it's almost, I don't know, I felt like in the moment I
Imposter
didn't.
syndrome.
Yeah, it, definitely, definitely. I was told that later after on, after well, or as well. But yeah, I didn't know, like know what to believe in that sense. Mental health is important. I do suggest that people get help if they even think that they need it, because if you're thinking about it, that there's something there. But I don't know. I wish I was kind of told this at a younger age. I feel like it would have solved a lot of issues when I was younger.
Yes, I agree.
Now that you're
And
saying
then
that, I'm thinking like, can they ever put like a mental health class in high school? Like, I know there's so many things we're missing at like how to navigate life once you graduate, right? Like your finances and like everything in general. Like, how do you make your life easier when you become an adult? But that's something they should talk about, because I mean, a lot of the times they don't give it to you unless you need the help, you know what I mean? And a lot of the times, like, therapists say you're supposed to be coming to these classes so you have the tools before you get anything. Like, even if you're think you're perfect, like everybody has something to improve, right? And I think it's very, very important, because a lot of the times this is why we think there's it's so taboo, right? It's something you don't talk about. And as a man, like I don't know about you, but my dad would like hides all of his emotions, and even if he goes through stuff, like he's sitting there fighting the pillows and fighting the cars, like you're saying, Myra, like literally my dad would hit the car, and I'm like, what the heck is going on here? And as a child, I'm like, What? Like, he tells me to cry, but he can't cry. Like, I was so confused. And then I grew up with just boys, right? And it was always like, no puedes llorar. Y sigue para adelante, no pasa nada. Like, or they'd like pinch him, no puedes llorar. So I'm like, what? That hurt. Like, what do you mean? But like, growing up, that's just what you saw. And I was like, okay. But then they'd allow me to cry, right? So it's like, just seeing the double narrative or like the double standards was just like really confusing sometimes. But I don't know, it's just how we're grown up, right? And from there we start analyzing, like, is that part of why I'm traumatized? But it's like so many things come into play, whether it's society or culture and like our standards, and like now that we're adults, what are our rules for the kids, and it's like changing the narrative and then seeing like how I have my rules, right? But then if they go to my mom's house and they're over there crying, like seeing how they're so different with them versus my brothers, and like it's just like, what do you mean? You would tell my brother not to cry. The way they treat my kids against like how they brought us up, right? It's like they treat them like so spoiled and whatever. Like, and then when I try to put my rules, it's like, no, no les puedo regañar, no les puedo decir. I'm like, dude, what do you mean? Like, they have to listen to me, and I don't care if you're like we're at your house, but they still have to listen to me. Like, it gets so hard, but yeah, it's just. It's the cultural expectations are just different.
And I'm a big believer in therapy and counseling and all of that. I'm a big advocate for that. And when, lots of the times you hear, I remember when my husband and I, we went to couples therapy, the therapist said that a lot of the times people, by the time they get there, it's too late. So it's actually a good thing to go, even when in the good times, right? Even when you and your partner are doing really well, or even if emotionally you're doing really well, like you should still go to therapy, because a lot of times when you end up going, it's like something so traumatic has already happened that it's kind of too late. When my daughter was 12, she started experiencing a little bit of depression. And right away, I was like, oh, you're going to therapy. Like, I already know I'm prepared. I know my kids are going to be traumatized by me. I know that I've caused them some sort of trauma in their life. So I am prepared that the minute they even think about therapy or wanting help, I'm like on it. So she's actually been in therapy. She's 17 now. So I'm really bad at math. Yvette, can you help me out here? She started at 12. She's
Five.
17. Five. Thank you.
How are you
5
doing the work
years
here?
she's been
Just
in
kidding.
therapy. Yeah. She's been in therapy now, and it's like I'm thinking around that same time. I'm gonna, even if my son doesn't say anything, I'm just gonna put him in. I'm just gonna just go for one session, see how you feel it out, see how you like it.
I love that. Because a lot of the times, like, we're not prepared as parents to know, like, when something is going on. And then half the time, like, you're saying, I know we've talked in other episodes where you're like, if you are picking it up as a mom, you're not failing. Like, you know how I'm telling you, sometimes we feel like we have mom guilt or we're gonna fail as a mom. But it's like, if you're worried about it, then you're being more of a good mom than you are. Like, you're better of a mom than what you think you are, I guess, in other words. But yeah, it's like you're taking the initiative to be prepared for that moment. And sometimes that's what we do need.
Yeah. Do you have any kids, Giovanni, or no?
No.
Oh, okay. I was just curious if maybe you had like some advice or something that you would like share to other parents about, I don't know, like raising kids, like especially boys, like raising boys in this crazy world right now, like about, I don't know, just some sort of advice. I was just curious.
I mean, I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews, which I can kind of relate to. Not in the sense of like, oh, that's my kid, but like I also know what it's like to be around them when they're feeling a certain type of way. Like I wouldn't like if I, for example, if I had a kid, I wouldn't approach them like when they're upset in a sense of like, tell me what's wrong. That's like, what are you thinking about? And if you see that they're not wanting to open up, then you start to open up. Like, I remember when I was younger, I used to feel this type of way, and it's like I felt uncomfortable and I felt sad. So, I don't want you to feel like that. If you ever decide to open up, understand that there's going to be no judgment. This is more of like, I want you to be okay. Like, I wouldn't try to force them to open up, but try to understand them because the way we grew up is not the way they're grown up, and the way we grew up is not the way our parents grew up. So it's like we have to be able to connect on a whole different terms.
You're so You're so smart, Giovanni. You're so,
Thank you.
you're like so smart. Thank you so much. I'm just so thankful that you said that. I just really appreciate those words. They mean a lot to me because I will try to implement that with my son, to like not force him to say how he's feeling, but just him knowing that I'm there when he needs, when and if he needs me to. And like you said, me opening up. And I also read, I don't know if this is true, I'm asking, but I read that sometimes for boys, it's easier to have a conversation with them if you're not looking at them face to face. So like if you're driving somewhere, so we're both like, facing sideways, like driving, that sometimes is like a place where they feel a little bit more comfortable because we're not like looking at each other. Or if you're playing a sport, like if we're shooting hoops or something, right? Like, hey, like you want to talk about this? Like that moments like that are good for boys. I don't know what you think about that.
So actually, I do think that it has some sort of truth behind it. I don't know how like 100% real that is, but I do have this moment with my dad last week where he saw that I was kind of like out of it, and he told me straight up. He's like, what's wrong? Something's on your mind and you're not saying it. Like, you're upset. I could tell you're sad." And I was like, "Man, I don't know about being sad, but I'm." And then I started to kind of like see that he could tell, and it was the first time he's ever noticed something like that or spoke up about it. And the whole time we talked, it wasn't like full eye contact. I was just focusing in front of me, and I was just telling him, like, kind of dropping hints of like what I was feeling, and then I just opened up. But I didn't understand. I didn't like realize that till now that you said that. So that there could be some truth behind it. But I think it also really depends on like what it is that's bothering you, how intense it is. 'Cause it can be intimidating to talk about, regardless of what it is. If it's intimidating as an adult, imagine how intimidating it's gonna be as a child or young adult, right? There's ages or I don't know, they vary.
You just hit the spot. I'm just like thinking of my kids, and like when I ask them questions and I know something's off and they just don't want to tell me, and I'm like, can you just tell me? And I want to be a fixer, right? Like I'm the helicopter mom. And then like this brings me back to the episode that we also had with Angel, my brother, where he was saying that like we have such a huge age gap. He's like 8 years younger than me, and then from me to my older brother, or the one next oldest to me, is 8 years too. So like we were always in these different age groups, and we just didn't really, know how to communicate as much until we were adults. But even then, like we don't want to worry each other. So I'm an open book, but they're not. Like I don't know if it has to do with them being men, but like my little brother is very vocal. But then he's like, I don't want to worry anybody, so I just keep it to myself or my friends, and they can help me manage, what I'm going through. And I'm like, but we're all adults now, but it's just like we don't have that connection, I guess you can say. And I thought we did, but then it wasn't until we had the episode that I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize how much of a... He's like, well, if we just don't have that connection where it's like, I can come to you and tell you stuff. And I'm like, well, you can, but then I want to fix the problem. And that's where he's like, yeah, that's what's not happening because I have to deal with the problem. And I'm like, okay, makes sense. So now I'm like approaching my kids when I want to know something. Like my oldest is always like trying to hide from me. And I'm like, honey, like I'm here, but then I want to go and beat somebody up, but like theoretically, not saying I'm going to put my hands on anybody, but like because he just goes through so much, and he's just like so fragile and the sweetest kid in my mind, but then when he doesn't know how to express himself and like his speech delay, so the kids don't understand, and they're like, kids are so mean. So I'm like, ugh, I just want to go over there and like put some sense into these kids, but I gotta take a step back and remember like we were all kids, and like we all process things differently, so it's like you try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but it's just so hard as a mom, like oh, it's bad.
And it's also too about respecting, right, what they gotta say, respecting when they gotta open up, or because you can like show them that you're gonna be there whenever you need it, and they'll decide that moment that they're willing to open up. And till then, like you just gotta respect it, because if they feel it forced, they're not gonna do it.
I know, but it's like, 'cause for me, I'm like, I don't know if he just doesn't know how to like express what's going on. But like half the time, more than half the time, he knows that I will go and do something about it. So that's why he's like very limited. But then if my mom goes and asks him, like she'll literally have to be like asking million questions and not staring at him, like you're saying, no eye contact. And he will eventually open up, but it literally has to be like on his timing, which is like respecting the timing, you know, which I get now. And thank you for telling me that, because I'm just like, sometimes I get so frustrated. I'm like, I just want to help. And I feel like I'm not being a good mom because I'm not able to help. But I mean, I get it now.
Yeah, and like for me, the where I'm coming from is that when I was teaching at SF State, I had students that were going through some stuff, right? And I'm 29, and some of them would be like 24, 23, 22, 19. Like there's some that were even older than me, but we're so close in age that they would like trust me, and they'd be like, I'm going through some stuff right now. And I wouldn't even ask anymore. I'd be like, no, I totally understand. But like, let's see how you feel. And depending on that, we'll see what happens from here on, you know? And I
Yeah.
have a student who legit, like, the last third of the semester, they were just like, not all that, like, all their sense of like paying attention in class. Sometimes would like skip class and stuff, not do assignments. And they came in like the last day of class. And they just started crying, like telling me what was going on. And I was like, you could have just like told me something. I would completely understand, you know? Like
Yeah.
I don't want you to feel guilty for life having its toll on you. That's not okay to feel guilty, right? Because it's not up to you what life does. Like you just have to react and, you know, come up from that. And we talked for a little bit, and yeah, it's in a sense, sometimes we have to be that person that they can come to whenever they need it, and that won't be up to us. Or for whatever it is, you know, sometimes it might be something small, sometimes it might be something that's gonna make us uncomfortable.
I
But
love that. Thank you
like,
for sharing that.
if we're willing to like be that person, then no, so be it.
I think you need to be a counselor. Sorry.
You can do art therapy. You can do art.
Yes, dude.
Yeah, we're just we don't get enough guys on this podcast, so like when we have them, we're just like we want to ask them everything because we just don't get enough guys, and we want more guys, and we want, men to feel like they have a space here too. So thank you so much for saying all of that. And we know you have a lot of exciting projects going on right now. What's the next big thing you are working on?
So I'm currently working on making a body of work that's around maybe 50 pieces, and I'm working on getting a solo show in San Francisco with the gallery. So I'll have, yeah, that work displayed out there. And yeah, I'll be going to Mexico City next year. I try to go every year now. But seeing if I can get some contacts out there to possibly have a show in Mexico City.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing. When you do the show in San Francisco, please let us know. We
Will
would
do.
I would love to go, and we would love to like share it with, our listeners and on our personal pages too. So please let us know.
Hell yeah, will do.
Yeah. And that's really cool about Mexico too. I've never been to Mexico City, but it seems like the perfect place for really cool art.
It's a really important place when it comes to art. I feel like it's almost like the center of, from what I've seen, like the center of the art world is, or not the art world, but like in the art world in Mexico is Mexico City. Every year they do a art fair where it's like galleries around the world go and they meet there. And yeah, this year was my second year, and then next year will be my third year going there. And you get to meet the artists, the gallery owners, collectors. That's a little bit of everything in it, but you do have to go with an open mind of like willing to network, right? I feel like that's one of the, if I could say anything that anyone can take from anything I've said today, is network, right? When it comes to work, when it comes to just being a person, right? Get to know people, because you might meet someone one day that will might have a job for you later on. Or you know, they might be a reference for example, for me, for an art show, or maybe even just for like, for example, a podcast or something, right? So it's just network, and yeah, I feel like that helps everyone. Anyone, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. That's a good reminder. That's something I need to work on too, is networking more. But thank you. So thank you for that reminder. Would you say that the Mexico City, like having your own show, is that like a goal that you want to, like in the near future for you?
It's one of them, yeah. But I wouldn't say it's. I wouldn't. I guess it is. I would use it more of like as a step, not a goal, because I feel like that's more feasible. But it gets one of it's like one of the next nearest goals to the bigger goals. But yeah.
What's like your, what would you say is one of your big goals?
Probably.
Too
Probably
good
like
not to share.
having like a or being a part of a show in like New York or something, or maybe like Chicago. Yeah, so it's being a part of something that's pretty big when it comes to art. Eventually, essentially like getting a different stage rather than just here in Cali, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That sounds like a pretty cool goal, and I'm sure that you will get there. I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
So to kind of close or kind of end the episode, the last question that we like to ask all of our interviewees is, what's, is that a word, interviewees? I'm over here making up words today. I don't even know the word, but what's the best advice you've ever received? And what is the worst advice you've ever received?
Best advice is don't compare yourself to anyone else, right? Because everyone's going through their own journey. Everyone's going through their own process of growing, and they have different tools, right? So it's like it might not seem fair sometimes, and that's okay. That's just how our cards were dealt. You know, it's our job to get the tools we need to get to where we want to be. Worst advice? I received a lot. Actually, my high school counselor, it wasn't even advice. It was just, I was barely thinking of applying to college to Sonoma State. I didn't even know what college was. And she told me not to apply. I was like, well, why? And she said, well, one, you're poor and you're Mexican. And there's people that are better than you that are better fit. Yeah.
God, this was
Yeah.
a school counselor, like at high school.
Yeah.
Do they still work there? Because they need to be
No, because
fired.
when I graduated with my BFA, I went like literally days after to show them, but they were retired.
Ugh, well, thank the Lord that they are not there anymore. That is a horrible thing to say to anyone. I'm so sorry they said that to you, but I'm glad you proved them wrong.
Yeah, I got my master's now, so.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Damn right you did. You tell them. I hope they watch this. I'm just kidding. where can people find you?
Instagram, geobuzzed, JIOBUZZED.
And we will put all of that information in the description below. Thank you so much, Giovanni, for being here. I learned so much from you. So if nobody else listens, you have changed my life. I promise you that. Thank you so much for being here, for being so open, for being so vulnerable, for having such great advice. We wish you nothing but the best. Please let us know about your show in San Francisco. I would love to go and so support and share on all of the socials. Thank you so much for being here.
Of
Thank you
course,
for
thank
coming
you.
on.
Yes.
Sorry. You can
No,
go.
you're good. Just thank you for sharing your stage.
No, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. As she said, we don't get a lot of men on here, so it's like getting those aspects of like how it is growing up and your experience and like helping other people feel like they're not alone, not just the women that come on here. Because a lot of the times there is societal similarities and, you know, cultural similarities that we all deal with, and like the way we all handle things is a little bit different. So we really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for being here.
Perfect. Thank you.
So we want to thank our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and we hope you have a beautiful week. We will see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.